L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card...
Right this way.
It's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. I'm Dan Harris, joined by Mike Tagliere. You can find us on Twitter at DanHarris80 and at Mike Tagliere NFL. Tagalicious, how you doing, man?
I'm good, dude. We were talking a little bit before we started recording here, and we both had awesome weekends. We both had dates with our ladies downtown, and you went to New York, I went to Chicago. I mean, obviously we know Chicago's the better one, but we both had a good, relaxing weekend, and then we could return for NFL and witness some of the craziest stuff I think we've seen all year. So, yeah, it was a good weekend, man.
Yeah, none of this Chicago versus New York. We're not going to do that right now, unless we're talking Bulls-Knicks, in which case my life was ruined as a young man growing up every year because of Jordan, but that's fine. And yes, if you don't follow me on Twitter, or if you do and you haven't seen it, you should check out what is probably the latest tweet that I've made, which is a picture of a milkshake that my wife actually forced me to order when we were in New York this weekend.
Forced you to order?
Forced, Tags. I mean, look, this physique doesn't happen by accident. All right, I can't be doing stuff like that. Yeah, and it's pretty amazing. So that was pretty much what you can look at for my weekend. But yes, today was crazy. We were just talking about it. The Dolphins are about to win as we're recording here. The Titans, who were down so many people on defense, won. Both the Bears and the Jets won. This might be the craziest day of football that's ever happened. But let us begin, as we always do, with your biggest winner of the day, Tags.
Biggest winner of the day is Christian Kirk. And, it's something that doesn't really surprise me. He was someone that was on, like, my buy low. Like, everything, all the vitals were good with him. And this was a matchup that he should have crushed against Tampa Bay. Obviously, I didn't anticipate three touchdowns, but he's definitely someone who people are going to look at in a different light now, because he was like on the verge. Like, people are like, should I start him every single week? And I'm like, that the targets are good. Keep pumping him in the lineup. Something good's going to happen eventually. And, you know, it did. So he's definitely the biggest winner for me, because people are going to actually want to start him moving forward.
Yeah, Kirk has a monstrous day. He sees 10 targets, 6 catches, 138 yards, and 3 touchdowns. All right, so let me ask you something. You had him, I believe, 27th coming into this week. So that's, you know, wide receiver 3. Whenever I talk about Tags rankings and my rankings, it's always half PPR, because that's what we use. And also, when I talk about wide receiver 2, wide receiver 3, I'm just thinking normally 12-team league. So you have him as sort of a strong wide receiver 3 coming in. Is he into the wide receiver 2 territory yet?
He is not there. The inconsistencies with Kyler Murray are going to prevent him from doing that. Murray hasn't looked... I mean, this is my opinion. I don't think Murray's looked very good. I think that volume disguised a lot of his play in the beginning of the year, and then we got further in. It was like, okay, there's a little bit of strides here, but I don't see a difference maker yet. And I'm not saying he can't become that. He really can, but Lamar Jackson is like a different breed. And Lamar Jackson, even though he doesn't have the arm that Kyler Murray does, he's more of a game changer, in my opinion, with the way that he sees the field. But that's my concerns. And, you know, when you have guys like this that are struggling a little bit with their accuracy, it's going to affect the pass catchers on a weekly basis. So I can't say I'd put him into wide receiver 2 territory, because that's where that's the territory of guys that you could almost stick in no matter what the matchup is, because you just feel confident playing them.
Yeah, no, I agree. And again, he's coming off a game where he didn't do much against San Francisco. So, you know, you've got Kirk as a guy who is certainly in a matchup like this. I assume that most fantasy owners were starting him, because they really just don't get much better than going against the Bucks as a pass catcher. But, you know, generally speaking, I agree there are going to be some ups and downs. I like him going forward as well. I had him just behind you. I agree that he's still outside of the wide receiver two territory, but not by much. How about your biggest loser?
Robbie Anderson. Drop him.
I mean, I can't disagree. I was disagreeing for a long time. I didn't start Anderson anywhere, but I have held him every single place. I mean, the bottom line is this, and we'll get into the Jets. The Jets didn't look, I mean, they looked fine on offense. They have certain, you know, certain other people we might be worried about, like Le'Veon Bell. But, you know, Jamison Crowder has another very solid day. Demaryius Thomas is a guy who's putting up decent numbers. Robbie Anderson, I believe it was one catch for 11 yards on the day. You know, and look, he had, you know, at least one, you know, a shot to him in the end zone where there was pass interference. So maybe, but this is a guy really who, regardless of the size of the league at this point, you could just put him on your waiver wire, right? There's no, I mean, again, we've talked a million times. The Jets schedule is remarkable for pass catchers, but the last two games have started that stretch and he's done nothing. So full on drop, no worries about him whatsoever, right?
I mean, against the Dolphins and the Giants, those are like legit two of the best matchups you could possibly have. So you can never start him with like any confidence. And that's, I mean, we have the fantasy playoffs coming up. So if you're not going to be able to start him with confidence, then why hold on to him?
Yeah, no, I agree. Unfortunately, I really have been holding him in pretty much everywhere where I owned him because I just felt like, you know, they've shown a connection before, Darnold and Anderson. So I would assume that it's coming, but it's just not. Despite the win, the Jets are a disaster. And, you know, other than Crowder and, of course, Bell, who we'll get to, I think you can pretty much move on from everybody on that team. So let's move into my favorite segment. What's your problem, man? So tags. Hollywood Brown. He missed several games with an injury, and he was held in check against the Patriots, understandably, last week with three catches for 48 yards. But catches all four of his targets here for 80 yards and a touchdown. You had him 50th in your rest of season rankings. Like, not even a wide receiver four. Was this just someone who you wanted to see show that he was healthy, or is he still someone who's going to fall outside of the wide receiver three range for you?
He's outside the wide receiver three range. I don't think the upside justifies wide receiver three territory. There are guys like Will Fuller that you kind of have to live with the ups and downs of their production and say, you know what, you know, he's not going to produce every single week, but I want those big ones, like the ones that could win me a week. Marquise Brown's had one of those games all year. I mean, there's one game this year where he kind of like went off, and it was back in week one against Miami. You know, coming back in this game, Cincinnati, the matchup was beautiful, but knowing that Lamar Jackson is not throwing the ball necessarily well, this kind of goes back to, I was just talking about Kyler Murray on why you can't really trust Christian Kirk as a wide receiver too on a weekly basis, because it's like, for one, he's not getting enough targets. We could say that about Marquise Brown. You know, he's had like four or five targets in, I think, four games this year that he has played. He's been dealing with a foot injury on and off. He had that foot surgery this offseason. So it's like, is this stuff lingering? There's just like a whole lot of concerns for me with him. Too much of a boomer bust player. He is a rookie dealing with injuries, has an inaccurate quarterback. There's just a lot of things. He has matchups in week 12, 13, 14 against the Rams, the 49ers, the Bills. So, I mean, he's one of those guys where I can't ever say that you should confidently start him. So, I mean, I would rather have guys on my team like Mohamed Sanu, who, you know, he just showed a little bit more with Tom Brady when he came back. If you say that you want to own Marquise Brown over Larry Fitzgerald, that's fine, I guess. But like guys like Jamison Crowder, I just think they offer a little bit more stability.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. But I mean, 50th, where is he going, Tex? Is he moving up at least? Is he into the...
He's wide receiver 44 right now. So he's he moved up, but not very much.
All right, man. I mean, I think that that's fair. I just think like a guy like Brown, again, who you make a fair point. Again, he has not seen an abundance of targets necessarily, but I just feel like he's the type of guy who, you know, I'm not going to compare him to Tyreek Hill because he doesn't have nearly the quarterback, at least in terms of the passing acumen or anything like that. And he doesn't have the speed or exactly the talent of Hill, but he is a guy who I think he's the type of guy who can succeed without necessarily a lot of targets. And look, I'm not arguing for him to be a wide receiver, too far from it. But I do think that he's a guy, once you get to that range, we talk about it every week. Once you get to that range, you're basically kind of just like, man, I don't really know what I'm going to get here. So it's fair to say sometimes that there probably isn't that big a difference between your wide receiver 30, 32 or something like that, and your wide receiver, you know, 50 at this point, because they're just not a lot of stability. But for me, he's a guy who, you know, he cracks my top 40 for me because he's a guy who, you know, in the end, you make a fair point. He's got Houston and the Rams, the 49ers, the Bills, not a great schedule coming up. But I think he's got enough, you know, with his speed, with his potential to be able to do enough, you know, to have even the one or two couple of shots a game. Sort of like Robbie Anderson when Robbie Anderson was terrible, like he was this year, right? Like not a guy who you felt great about, but you felt like there was going to be that one play somewhere in there that was going to happen. And so for me, he has a little more potential than a guy who was, you know, when I saw him at 50th, that sort of was jarring to me. But 44th, All right. I think we need to go a little higher, but we can deal with that next week when he goes for, you know, 6 for 120 and a score.
Or 3 for 20.
It's possible. We'll think about it. But all right. How about Golden Tate here, Tex? Sterling Shepard could be done for the season. You know, Tate's got that slot position that we love. He torched the vaunted Jets secondary. I mean, you know, you can barely get any wide receiver to do anything against that secondary. 95 yards and 2 scores. Now he's 39th in your rest of season ranking. So I got to ask, what's your problem with Golden Tate?
Yeah, he moved up to 31. Like, these things are like really quick in terms of like when we find out about Evan Engram, when we find out about Sterling Shepard. These, like, he's someone that moved up. I have him at 31. So he is up higher than that, but I'm really still not excited. I'm marking him as one of my sell highs. He is getting the targets, but it's more like a glorified Jamison Crowder. I don't think that he's going to score touchdowns at this high of a rate for the remainder of the season. He has matchups. So first off, he has his bye in week 11. Then he's going to come out of that and play the Bears, who have been really good against slot receiver. Buster Screen has actually been really good. The Packers have been really good against slot receivers. And then you go to the Eagles, and I know everybody thinks the Eagles suck, but they were really good against slot receivers this year. So it's like the next three matchups, including a bye. So over the next month, I don't think he's going to be anything better than like a low-end wide receiver 3. So I consider him a sell. I mean, if you can get through like those weeks, great, because he has Miami and Washington in weeks 15 and 16. He could be a league winner if you have a first-round bye. But again, it's getting through that next month. You know, if you're someone that needs to make the playoffs and you're relying on him for like wide receiver 2 production, I don't think you're going to get it.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I have no problem with 31. 39 to me struck me as...
Yeah, it was a little low.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I mean, look, you make a good point about it, the rest of the schedule. But in the end, 39 definitely struck me. I mean, he's a wide receiver. He was coming into this week. And a guy who you're going to start as a wide receiver 3 in half PPR leagues. Again, that's what we're talking about. So that especially gives a little boon to his value. But yeah, for me, look, that's around where I have him. I think I have him 29th probably rest of season. So we're right in line now. So we're simpatico at this point. But again, 39 was just the one that struck me. But like you always do, you just kind of take the wind out of my sails because you're like, oh, yeah, I moved that guy up to basically where you want me to have him. So great, Tags. We're off to a fantastic start. But let's get into the games. But before we do, we just finished week 10, or by the time you're listening to this, week 10 is pretty much over. So the unfortunate reality is that a bunch of you are either out or close to being out of the playoff push in your season-long leagues. But you don't need to worry about that because there's FanDuel. With FanDuel, you don't need to worry about injuries or busts or anything like that. It is a new team each week with none of the hassles of season-long fantasy. And if your Week 10 matchup is over, you can just spend tomorrow night playing FanDuel. Do you think Josh Gordon's going to have a big debut with the Seahawks? Is Matt Breida going to dominate touches in the 49ers' backfield over Tevin Coleman? With FanDuel, you get to go with the guys you really like in any given matchup. And this season, there are more ways to win than ever because FanDuel has more ways to win cash prizes and once-in-a-lifetime experiences during every single game, every single week. And now FanDuel is offering a great promotion to new users. You can get $20 in site credits when you deposit $20 or more. You'll get $5 in credits each of the next 4 weeks. To get this great offer, just go to FanDuel.com/FantasyPros or download the FanDuel app. That's FanDuel.com/FantasyPros. And we also have a separate great $10 offer going on with FanDuel right now that gets you access to all of our premium content and tools for 6 months. That's a $65 value. All you need to do to claim that offer is go to fantasypros.com/offers and make a minimum $10 deposit as a brand new FanDuel user. Again, that's fantasypros.com/offers for 6 months of unlimited access to our premium offerings. All right, Tags, let's jump into the games here. As always, we will start with the Thursday game, Raiders 26, Chargers 24, a game that will most likely be remembered for like the worst two-minute drill or whatever Philip Rivers was trying to do at the end of that game. But let's start with the Raiders here. Josh Jacobs, 16 carries, 3 catches, 101 total yards and a score. Tyrell Williams, his 5th straight game with only 3 receptions. When he doesn't score a touchdown, he's usually not worth starting, maybe a borderline wide receiver 3. But how about Darren Waller here? Tags, 3 catches for 40 yards, just 7 catches in his last 3 games. I understand it's tight end. There's 8 of them, maybe 7 if Ingram is done, that we can kind of trust. But is Waller at least sliding down to the back end of that? Or are you just basically saying, look, he'll probably bounce back to what he was doing a few games earlier in the season?
Yeah, I happen to think he's someone that's going to bounce back. He might be one of the better buy low guys. I am worried about the, 7 targets over the last 2 games. That's a floor that we didn't know he had because he was a guy that was seeing consistently like 7-8 targets a game. But with on the schedule, I was looking at that for streamers looking like moving forward, and they play the Bengals next week, and that's just a matchup that you target with every single player that you potentially can, and then after that it's against the Jets. So there's two matchups there that you're really not concerned about. The team should be able to move the ball. Tyrell Williams doesn't look like he's playing at 100%. Even if he is, he doesn't look very good. Zane Jones still learning the offense. I just think it's been like by happenstance that he hasn't really produced. I do believe it'll come back at some point. You know, Derek Carr is playing competently, not doing a whole lot fantasy wise, but I mean, again, Waller is one of those seven or eight tight ends that you could just kind of stick in your lineup every single week and understand that he's no sure thing, but he's like just outside that elite tier.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, you know, again, without Ingram, there's seven, and he's certainly within that, but he is definitely moving from, I don't know, third, maybe fourth, because I had him above Ertz for a little while, down to more like the sixth or the seventh range. And again, Tags, out of curiosity, do you have Josh Jacobs now as an RB1 in half PPR leagues?
Josh Jacobs, he is trended towards that territory. I have him.
I know. He was outside. Where is he?
I have him at RB12 exactly right now.
All right. I'm going to accept that then, because I saw he was outside and I was thinking about what's your problem, man, but instead, I'll let you, since I knew, of course, that you would move somebody up, because you always do, and steal my thunder. Let's move on to the Chargers here. I think Melvin Gordon is like all the way back here, Tags. Mm-hmm. I mean, 22 for 108 and a score plus a 25-yard catch. Again, is he officially an RB1 rest of season?
Yeah, it seems like this is back. He's right there with Josh Jacobs, and I was kind of teeter-tottering those guys back and forth and like, I think you can go either one. I think Gordon probably has more upside because he plays in an offense that's somewhat underperformed at this point. It's almost just like they have too much talent on offense to continue to waste it. It was a tough matchup against Oakland, and to know that Melvin Gordon goes in for, you know, over 100 yards on the ground and a touchdown, it was just the second time this year, I think, the Raiders have allowed like an RB1 type performance to a running back. So yes, he's definitely back. Austin Eckler getting two touches through the air, six touches on the ground. It seems like this backfield, when they did the offensive coordinator change, they wanted it to go back to the way it was last year. It was something that worked. They didn't rely on Rivers a whole lot. I mean, he threw three interceptions in this game, which that was probably that's what cost him the game. Let's be honest about it.
I think this was the worst game I've ever seen Phillip Rivers play ever.
There was a game earlier in the year he looked terrible, where he started checking down every single play. That's the game that Eckler had like 15 targets. Like, he looked terrible that game too. So maybe Rivers is getting towards the end of his career. I think we just assume that because Tom Brady and Drew Brees are playing this way into their 40s, that, you know, quarterbacks, so all of a sudden they're just able to play later in their career. But maybe it's not that way.
Yeah, he definitely wasn't looking good. But let's talk about the pass catchers then. Keenan Allen, he does see the targets again, 11 of them. He catches eight, just 68 yards though. And Mike Williams, who you were down on and then you forgave because of his air yards, just three targets, two catches though for 55 yards. Any takeaways from the receivers? Are they pretty much where you thought they were?
I mean, it's so frustrating to see Keenan Allen continue to struggle to put points up. I would still buy him in fantasy leagues. He's a guy that's produced for far too long to just bad now. No, he's not just bad now. He went through a slump, and Phillip Rivers has gone through a slump. You know, can they bounce back out of it? Follow the targets for Keenan Allen. He's getting those targets, and it's like you look at the guys around him in the rankings, like Kenny Galladay, Allen Robinson, Stephon Diggs. They don't have they have scabs too. Let's not pretend that those guys are untouchable and that they're going to produce every week. We also can't forget that Keenan Allen was the number one fantasy wide receiver after 3 weeks. So I would buy Keenan Allen. I would actually reach out to the owner and see what it would take to acquire him, because you're probably going to get him at wide receiver two, wide receiver three prices, and a guy that, you know, it's almost his basement price. You know that he's not going to get any worse than he's been.
And don't forget, Tags, I mean, the biggest thing, he was battling a hamstring injury, right? I mean, that's you could really, not for this game, but before that, which is why you can kind of perhaps write off some of his production. He certainly looked healthy enough here. Really, it was about the targets, because he had a couple of games there where he just wasn't seeing them. As long as he is getting this amount of targets, which, again, I think they kind of want to revert to what they did last year, as you said, with the change in offensive coordinator, pound Gordon, pepper Allen with targets. He's going to be fine, I think. I mean, it's frustrating if you own Allen, and I'm not saying he's probably not where he was, you know, even if you want to buy low at, you can't expect what we saw last year necessarily. But certainly as a bounce back, yeah, I buy it completely coming in. And I thought he looked good in this game overall. It was just a little disappointing with the fact that, you know, you get so many targets, eight catches, just 68 yards. Again, perhaps Phillip Rivers' worst game this season in a long time, who knows. But in the end, not the best game, but I do agree with buying low on Keenan Allen. Let's move to today. Ravens 49, Bengals 13. No letdown here at all for the Ravens. Just a dominant performance all around, including two defensive scores. Lamar Jackson, just silly numbers. Only 17 pass attempts, but he completes 15 of them for 223 yards. He adds a mere 65 yards rushing, plus a touchdown, three passing touchdowns. He's a good quarterback. Meanwhile, Mark Ingram rushes for a touchdown, just 34 yards on only nine attempts. I mean, the game was pretty much in hand the entire time. Mark Andrews, eight targets, six catches, 53 yards, and two touchdowns. We already talked about Hollywood Brown. Any takeaways here from the Ravens or just beating up on a clearly inferior team?
Clearly inferior team with a starting a rookie quarterback. So, I mean, Ryan Finley, by the way, I feel bad for that guy. I mean, not to say that he's going to be an NFL quarterback at any point, but he was thrown into a situation where I don't think many would succeed. If you were to put Aaron Rodgers in the situation that he was put into today, I don't know if he would have done very well against this Ravens defense. So Ryan Finley, it's almost like the Bengals are saying, we're going to put in Ryan Finley against our divisional opponent, the Ravens, without AJ Green, without John Ross, and without our starting left tackle. And we're going to do this in order to show people that we need to draft a quarterback next year or something like that. Like, it's almost like setting this kid up for failure. I don't know. It's really weird how they handled the entire situation. But I don't want to take too much away from the Ravens side of things because it's a matchup where everybody stomps. It's good to see Lamar Jackson have the numbers he does. And he has absolutely crushed in matchups that he was supposed to like dominate against bad defenses. He's been there and he's obviously produced against good defenses as well, but he absolutely crushes, including, you know, through the air this week, a perfect 158.3 quarterback rating. So, I mean, he's the number one fantasy quarterback. I think I would probably take him over Mahomes for the remainder of the season, just knowing what I know about Mahomes' schedule.
Yeah, I think I'd still take Mahomes, but I don't know. Every week when I do the trade chart and I try to figure out what I'm going to do with Jackson, and every week I feel like maybe one week I had him as one, but almost every week I have him as two. I don't know why. There's always just like something where I'm like, maybe, but the guy is just preposterous. Again, a great matchup, but still, he, you know, not everybody completely succeeds in a great matchup, and he did it with ease. Now, on the Bengals side, you talked about Finley already, who, again, all things considered, I realized he threw a pick six and he had a bunch of trouble. I didn't think, you know, when I was watching the game, any time that I flipped onto it, it didn't look like he was that terrible overall. I mean, Tyler Boyd gets eight targets, six catches, and 62 yards. But let's talk about Joe Mixon here. I mean, this is really interesting, Tags. A really tough matchup for him. A negative game script. I mean, the game was over pretty much right out of the gate. The Ravens just blew him away. 30 carries, though, 114 yards. Plus two catches for 37 yards. Did they figure something out in the bye week? Is this what's good? Can we expect this going forward or what?
I don't know. It might have been sympathy on the Ravens' part. You know, like when you get there's those games that kind of just are outliers and you're like, what happened here? And it's like, oh, they were blowing out the team. They didn't really, you know, like it's almost like those days. And I love it when people say that there's no such thing as like bring in your A game and that every player comes to the game and they're all prepared and there is no clutch gene and all those things. There are certain times, you know, like Dan, I used to work in the finance industry when auditors would come to your job and they'd come in there and they're there for the week. Everyone is on their toes. Everyone is thinking clearly. Everybody is like ready to pounce and they're like, you know, prepared for it, right? And then there's the other days where it's like, you know, it's a Monday, everybody's coming off a long weekend, or a Tuesday, whatever the case may be, and everybody's a little lackluster. And this could be one of those games where it's like the Ravens jump out to like, you know, a three touchdown lead and it's like, we don't really have to like, you know, be on our A game here. So it could be one of those situations. I'm not going to put too much into it because this offensive line is crap. I don't think going from Andy Dalton to Ryan Finley helps anything. So yeah, I don't want to take too much away from it. So I'm going to go and look at the pass routes that Mixon ran to see if they kept him on the field more. Because if they did, that's definitely a step in the right direction. But I don't want to take away too much right now.
I mean, I think that's fair. For me, it was just the sheer volume. I, you know, regardless of the success about it, 30 carries. I mean, that's crazy to me. And again, maybe it was just like, look, we don't want Ryan Finley to just get his butt handed to him nonstop this entire game. So we're just going to run the ball since we know we're going to lose this one. That's fine. But he obviously did look good. And yeah, of course, I'm sure the Ravens kind of, once the game was over, kind of set. I mean, RG3 played in this game. They clearly were not putting up their best effort from the start to the finish because they didn't need to. But in the end, I don't know. I'm kind of encouraged here. I'm hoping that in the end, they at least realize that whatever they're going to do, the offense has to run much more through Mixon than it has been, considering they added Ryan Finley. So I'm hopeful that Mixon's value is going to rise significantly after this. I mean, I'm not saying value him that way in the trade, but I'm hopeful that this is a trend and a sign of things to come. Let's move on to the Browns 19, Bills 16. The spread on this game was the Browns -3, which looked ludicrous to me, and it shows you that Las Vegas knows everything. Baker Mayfield said he was going to force feed Odell Beckham Jr., and he did. He saw a season-high 12 targets, but just five catches, I believe, for 57 yards. Another tough matchup for Beckham here. But the schedule lightens up a bit going forward. Is he sticking at, I mean, I believe you had him 12th in your rest of season rankings. Is that where he's sticking? Is there anything you want to take away from this game?
Yep. I want to tell people that, yes, I was high on Beckham at the beginning of the year. Yes, that turned out to be wrong. I also admitted 3 weeks ago that Beckham was a sell. Like, some people, he still had that name brand value, and I said he has three matchups with Stephon Gilmore, Chris Harris Jr., and Tre'Davious White, that they're going to be brutal. Like, I recommended you could have actually benched Beckham last week. This week was another tough matchup, but I wouldn't have benched him. But going forward, things get a lot easier for him, so he's back in the bye column for me. So it's like, I'm following this stuff. Baker Mayfield throws for two touchdowns. It's the first time that he's done that all season long. It's really tough to take away a lot of good things about the Browns as a team. But again, you know, it can only help to have, you know, more time in that system because he didn't play in the offseason, in the preseason games at all. This isn't all on Beckham, though. It can be on Mayfield as well. I'm buying him because, again, we look at these wide receivers that are around that territory that I mentioned before, the Galladays, the Allen Robinsons, the Diggs, the Ridleys, the John Browns. They all have warts. They're all guys that they do have things that have they performed to this point better than Beckham? Yeah, they have. But at the same time, that doesn't necessarily mean for future performance. So I'm buying Odell Beckham.
Yeah, and again, their schedule, home against Pittsburgh, home against Miami, at Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Arizona. It's not the worst schedule for a wide receiver one or anything like that. Meanwhile, Jarvis Landry has the big game, 10 targets, 9 catches, 97 yards on the score. But let's talk about the running backs here. Nick Chubb, 20 carries for 116 yards and 2 catches on 4 targets. Meanwhile, Kareem Hunt, 4 carries for 30 yards, but he sees 9 targets, 7 catches, 44 yards. Chubb actually played 80% of the snaps here, Hunt just 58, but how do you feel about this backfield? I mean, that's a lot of work for Hunt in his first game back.
Yeah, that's like a 66-33 timeshare, which is obviously, it's still, Nick Chubb still is getting the majority of work, but the passing down work is big. And I say that because a full PPR format, Kareem Hunt actually outscored Nick Chubb today, and that's going to hurt. So, like, Nick Chubb wasn't always like heavily involved in the receiving game. Like, he was involved, but if he's going to start losing some of that pass down production and Kareem Hunt's going to see double the targets he does, Nick Chubb's floor goes that much lower. So he's someone that you have to put in that conversation and say, is Melvin Gordon a better guy to own going forward? I mean, I don't know if I'm ready to go there yet, but we at least have to consider that in a conversation.
I think there are two things kind of to point out. One is Chubb had already begun to lose sort of some passing down work, right, to Hilliard even before Kareem Hunt came. So I was already getting a little nervous about him. But the big thing here is this is not a game where the Browns are playing in like a hugely negative game script. They were behind for, you know, some of the game, and particularly at the end, Hunt got a few catches. But this, I mean, 7 catches. And in a game where they're just not like, all right, well, we've got it. We've got to go to the air. We've got to put our passing guy in, that's a little scary for me, you know, given where we were. So it is something that I am going to be mindful of. I've been slowly moving Chubb down my rankings. And again, I was not big on the Kareem Hunt's going to do anything. Chubb has provided his fantasy owners with great value so far. So there's no complaining about it whatsoever. But in the end, I was not somebody who was particularly concerned about when Hunt came back. It was down the road. He got injured, you know, in the preseason. So I really didn't think that he was just going to step in and take on this significant role. But this is a little bit more than I'm comfortable with. So I agree with you. I am getting a little worried about Chubb. I'm not sure Gordon goes ahead of him, but that's going to be right around the same range at this point, given where things are heading in Los Angeles. Let's go to the Bills here. Did we jump the gun a little bit on Devin Singletary? 8 for 42 on the ground, plus 7 targets, just 3 catches, 8 yards through the air. We were both, you know, jumping him up in our rest of season rankings. How are you feeling about him now?
Well, it was funny because, like, we talked about him on the DFS show this week, and Bobby talked to me about Singletary as a potential cash play, and I was like, it's all about removing as much risk as possible. And I mean, while I do believe that Devin Singletary has the starting job moving forward, I don't think they're going to totally ignore Frank Gore. It doesn't help that they didn't, you know, run a whole lot of plays this week. The running backs combined, I think it was just for 13 carries this week. That's not going to get it done. This tends to be a lower scoring team. Like, the Bills aren't a team that's going to throw up 30 points on the board very often. So I've actually, like, looked a little bit closer at the situation, and I'm like, you know what? I'm willing to move on from Singletary. He did lead them in touches again. He had 7 targets. He only caught 3 of them. So that's not bad. That's fine. He's going to go up against Miami next week, so maybe you just wait and play him against Miami and then sell him after that game, because their playoff schedule is brutal. Like, if you want to win a fantasy championship, you're not going to do it with Devin Singletary. They are going to play against the Baltimore Ravens, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the New England Patriots over weeks 14, 15, and 16. Those are all terrible matchups. Like, he's a guy that could break off a big play, but we could say that about a lot of different running backs. I have him as the number 30 running back remainder of the season, so I moved him down a couple spots based on this game, but I was always hesitant to move him up to begin with.
Yeah, this is really disappointing, man. I mean, just the lack of rushing attempts, you know, that I don't really, you know, Josh Allen was not good in this game. I mean, he was inaccurate, as he often is. He does score the two touchdowns here, but yeah, this is a game I completely agree. I kind of did. I got excited. I think I had him a couple spots higher than you did rest of season coming into this week, but I agree. I'm dropping him this game. Really kind of, it was really disappointing for me, because I expected him to do a lot more, at least in terms of touches. You know, I get that he got the seven targets, but you know, the fact that it's just 11 touches overall, really kind of a downer. Tags, nothing too exciting otherwise. I mentioned Josh Allen has the two touchdowns. John Brown, 11 targets, 5 catches, 77 yards. Cole Beasley, 6 targets, 4 catches, 74 yards. Anything here in the passing game, or feel like we could just move on?
I feel like we could probably just move on. John Brown just continues to get like what he does. Like, he hasn't gone crazy or anything like that, but he's been pretty consistent as he's in the wide receiver 2 territory.
Absolutely. He's been so much more consistent than I ever thought he would be, honestly. And
it's nuts.
It's crazy. Every week, he's just sort of delivering a pretty high floor performance, which I really love. Because, again, you and I are both huge fans of Smokey Brown. He appeared on the podcast a couple years ago. So he's a really good guy. So we're rooting for him. And it's nice to see him have such success particularly when he has a quarterback who's so inaccurate. He just is able to get it done week in and week out. Now, before we get to the next game, I want to remind everyone that we are giving away a signed Dak Prescott helmet over at fantasypros.com/contest. You can get all the details there. But to be entered, just leave a review for the show in Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher and send a screenshot of that review to contest@fantasypros.com. Now, that signed Dak Prescott helmet comes from our good friends over at Pristine Auction. Now, you surely know about them by now. It's where you should be going whenever you are looking to buy sports memorabilia of any kind, or really almost anything at all, because they have hundreds or even thousands sometimes of auctions every single day where you can bid on a ton of great items. And because they have so many auctions every single day, you get these crazy amazing deals. I mean, yesterday I saw a signed Amari Cooper jersey for $61.42 and a Tyreek Hill signed Chiefs helmet for $122. That signed Cooper jersey, the signed Hill helmet, every item at Pristine Auction is guaranteed from only the most trusted sources, and it is free to register and free to bid. You only pay money when you win an item. So go to pristineauction.com. That's PRISTINE auction.com, and use our promo code FANTASYPROS in the registration field when you sign up. You get a free $5 credit, and that lets them know that you heard about them from us, which is part of the reason that we're able to do things like the Dak Prescott helmet giveaway. All right, Tags, let's move on to our next game here. Falcons 26, Saints 9. That's why you don't fire Dan Quinn, Tags, like we've been saying. Keep that guy around. He gets his team fired up for these games. I mean, this is just football. I don't know. You shrug. Devonta Freeman knocked out of this game here with an ankle injury. He gained just 48 yards. I haven't seen anything yet, Tags, on the severity of it, but he was missed the vast majority of the game. So I don't know if you have either, but by the time you're listening to this, you'll probably know more. You know, with Ito Smith on IR, Brian Hill rushes 20 times for 61 yards. He also catches a touchdown pass. I'm sure you guys are going to get into that on the waiver wire show. So let's just focus here on the passing game. Kind of disappointing. I mean, Matt Ryan does throw for 2 touchdowns, just 182 yards through the air. His 2 touchdowns, 1 to Hill, the other to Austin Hooper, who also left this game with a knee injury, and I'm not sure of the severity on that one. Julio Jones sees 9 targets, just 3 catches for 79 yards. It was supposed to be a tough matchup here with Marshawn Lattimore, but Lattimore left the game in the second quarter with a thigh injury, and this is the 6th straight game without a touchdown for Jones here. Meanwhile, Calvin Ridley has a huge history against the Saints. We all kind of expected big things from him, held totally in check. 47 total yards, which includes his rushing yards, just 3 catches. What are your thoughts here, Tags, on the Falcons offense? Again, they win the game, but it's not particularly a good story.
Did Lattimore not end up returning? Because I know he left, and I didn't know if he ended up returning to that game or not. I thought
that he missed the rest of the game. We're doing this right after the game, so it's hard for us to double check. I thought that he left in the second quarter and did not return.
Okay, I'll have to check the snap counts on that, because it's like I try and keep my eye on all these different games, and it was more of like when I was watching that game, I got bored with the Falcons offense. Like, honestly, I was hoping for the Saints to make it a comeback. So, because the game script went a lot different than I think everybody expected it to. Like, Calvin Ridley was someone I liked this week because I felt like the Falcons were going to throw the ball 45 times. Obviously, that didn't happen. The Saints offense just was flat, man. I mean, Drew Brees double clutching. It was almost like he was unsure of himself every time I watched him throwing the ball outside of times that he was targeting Michael Thomas. Ted Ginn had a couple times where I thought one's a clear cut drop. The other one I think he could have had. Ginn had a really bad game, and unfortunately, I think he cost me money in DFS.
Yeah, you talked him up big time now this week. You were all on him.
Yeah, I liked him as like a tournament play, and in some tournaments I did really well, and if he would have hit, then it would have been like legit, like a chance at winning tournaments, but it is what it is, and it's fine. I think Alvin Kamara and Latavius Murray are both guys that I'd be willing to buy in fantasy football right now. I think you, like, basically coming off the games that they just did, they only had 9 carries combined. Kamara did see 10 targets, but Latavius is a guy that's probably locked into, it's that Ingram role, that, you know, that 8 to 12 touches per week and a higher scoring offense. Kamara is, he's still getting, like, you know, I'd say 60%+ of the work, which is plenty. I'm going out to see what I can get Kamara for and Latavius, because there are owners out there who were, they were worried about Alvin Kamara coming off the ankle injury, and with Latavius Murray coming off the big performances that he did with him out of the lineup. So I'm going to go and see if I could buy those guys.
Did he look 100% to you, Tags? Kamara? I mean, I know he caught all the passes. All right. He looked fine to you then in that game?
I thought he looked good to me. Yep.
All right. The only thing I was worried about with Murray, and again, they were behind here, so it could have been slightly game script. I mean, Kamara outsnapped him 52-16. I mean, if that's the level that Murray's going to get, I'm not sure whether or not he's got, I mean, unless he's basically getting a touch nearly every time he's out on the field. I wanted to see him get, be on the field a little more. Again, it was a negative game script for the vast majority of the game, so that could have been it. And maybe he can survive if whenever he's on there, he's going to get the ball. But to me, that was a little bit worrisome. Not enough, though. I agree. This is not a game where I'm worried about. It's weird, man. I mean, the Falcons sacked Brees 6 times. They had 7 sacks coming into the game. It was just something that really completely unexpected. But, you know, on the Betting Pros podcast, which goes, the Falcons were getting 13 points at the time we recorded it. And our guest, Adam Burke, he basically said he just could see this as a game where the Saints come out really flat, you know, off a bye. They've been on a major roll. They could kind of look past this. So maybe that's exactly what happened here, but definitely not a good game. But I agree. There's not all that much to read into it. Jets 34, Giants 27. Huge game for Daniel Jones. Let's start with the Giants here. Huge game for Daniel Jones, 308 yards and 4 touchdowns. But Saquon Barkley, a terrible game, 13 carries for 1 yard. I had to triple check that was true. 13 carries, 1 yard, plus 5 catches for 30 yards. Now, I did see that he apparently went for x-rays after the game, Tags. I'm not even sure on what. Was it his ankle? Because he looked like he was limping a little bit. I don't know if you've seen anything on that.
It says that he was banged up in the loss, but I didn't see anything on this in terms of like any details. He was seen entering the x-ray room, but that's all I'm seeing. But this could be a situation where it's like, our team's going to learn their lesson and like not allow players to dictate when they come back. If it's an actual high ankle sprain, maybe that's why Saquon Barkley hasn't been as effective as he was last year. You know, this is a team that, I don't want to say that it's better offensively. I don't know if Daniel Jones, if I can classify him as better. I think he's been somewhat inconsistent. I don't know. He was someone that, as I'm watching that game, I'm like, Saquon Barkley is going to be one of the best buy lows in football. But, you know, coming off the game a little bit dinged up, maybe that's something to be concerned about, because this team is obviously going nowhere fast.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't looked all that great. I mean, he had that big, you know, catch against the Cowboys, but other than that, was generally held in check. So it's something where, you know, you obviously, let's see what the injury news is. It's hard for us to comment on it now. If he's not, I mean, look, if they're going to throw him out there right now in a lost year, you're going to assume that he can't really do any major damage to himself. But hopefully he shows a little more something soon, because this was obviously a disappointing effort. When 13 carries for 1 yard is really something that, I'm still convinced it was a typo, even though I watched the game and he never gained any yards. Still, look, how about Darius Slayton here, Tags? 14 targets, 10 catches, 121 yards, and 2 touchdowns. We've talked, you know, let's assume Sterling Shepard is out for the year here with the concussion stuff. Obviously, he could come back, but let's just assume that. I mean, Evan Ingram could, they have a bye next week, so, you know, everybody could recover. But if both those guys are out, let's just say that, or even if just Shepard is out, is Slayton a guy who maybe fantasy owners can kind of rely on? I mean, they've got Chicago, Green Bay, and Philadelphia upcoming.
Yeah, the Chicago game, you don't really want to bank on him for production in that game, because he's like the type of guy that's been living off some big catches, right? And the Bears haven't consistently allowed that. Like, you can beat the Bears. The Bears are definitely beatable in that secondary. Kyle Fuller kind of shows that consistently. Amu Kamara can be beat deep. But, you know, looking at the schedule they played and knowing that they haven't allowed many big fantasy wide receiver performances, Slayton is someone that I'm willing to sell high on. It's a 14 target game. I mean, you should be able to get someone to buy him off your fantasy team. Like, if you go and pick him up off waivers, just look and see who the other teams were that were trying to acquire him and say, hey, I saw that you bid on him. What would you be willing to give me for him? I'd be willing to sell high because Daniel Jones has just been too inconsistent to rely on fantasy receivers against. Do we get Sterling Shepard back at some point? I don't know. Seems like Evan Ingram will come back at some point. Saquon Barkley's going to score touchdowns at some point. There's just so many variables with this team that I want to disconnect myself from bad football teams if I can help it. And this is clearly not a good football team.
Yeah, I mean, other than Golden Tate, who Tags and I both obviously love, as we talked about early on, this is not really, you know, Slayton is a guy, it's a good game, but, you know, they were behind for a lot of it, at least early on, where he got a lot of his targets and stuff like that. It's not a guy who I'm particularly excited about. And again, he's had these games where he's had an opportunity and he hasn't really delivered. So for me, yeah, certainly if you can sell high, I'm more than happy to do it. On the other side of the ball, Sam Darnold throws for a touchdown, runs for another, but let's talk about Le'Veon Bell here. He was questionable coming in with the knee injury. He does score, but just 18 carries for 34 yards on the ground, four catches for 34 yards. Look, I know yards per carry is not always a useful stat here, but he's been held below 4 yards per carry in every single game this season, except one. You like the touches. It's 22 touches. That's good. You'll take that. But is Bell still an RB1 for you in half PPR leagues, given that he still has this incredibly soft schedule that remains?
No. I mean, I moved him just outside RB1 territory. I have him as RB14. I'm slowly moving him down. It's like when you don't have scoring opportunities, this is the reason that I wasn't going to draft Le'Veon Bell. I talked about the fact that the Steelers were giving him plenty of room before contact. He was able to be a patient running back. The Jets don't. I mean, they're a team that basically last year their running backs had 1 yard before contact that they were averaging, and you're seeing the effects of that with Le'Veon Bell. He can't be a patient running back behind a bad offensive line. He'll get hammered in the backfield. Sam Darnold's been punished because of the bad offensive line play. It's just, this team's a mess. And this goes back to an article I write in the offseason, Dan. I don't know if you had a chance to see it. I've done it the last couple of years, and it's like, what does team scoring mean to fantasy football? And the top, I think it was top 16 wide receivers last year were tied to top 12 scoring offenses or something like that, or top 15 scoring offenses. Over the years, over the last like 10 years or 7 years, running backs to finish as a top six running back, 75% of them come from top six scoring offenses. So it's like, I did trying to find the correlation between. It seems obvious, but when people draft David Johnson, when they draft Le'Veon Bell, it makes me wonder, maybe they don't see it as common sense. Maybe they think it just means, just because you're a talented individual means that you're going to produce. Le'Veon Bell is one of the most talented running backs in the league, but he's in one of the worst situations on one of the worst teams. And, you know, same can be said. I don't want to say that Robbie Anderson is one of the most talented, but you're seeing the effects of a bad football team play into their fantasy performances. And that's why, as I mentioned with Slayton, I'm trying to distance myself from bad football teams.
And again, to be fair, he's 13th. So he's an obvious starter for both of us going forward. This is not something where you're like, oh my God, get rid of Bell, whatever you can do. Because again, he's going to get the volume. He's going to get the catches. I mean, not that many in this game, 4, but he's going to get that going forward. But yeah, I mean, look, Bell's running style is pretty much the antithesis of what you want for this Jets football team, because the offensive line is so abysmal. If you're waiting for holes to open, you're just going to be waiting there the entire time. I mean, it really doesn't work there. But again, he is going to see enough volume. He'll get the goal line work as long as he's healthy going forward. So again, I agree, just outside of RB1 range, but not somebody who you're running away from or anything like that, like fantasy owners seem to be want to do. But hopefully the touchdown assuages their doubts a little bit. Titans 35, Chiefs 32. This is a very exciting game. There's a lot to break down here. Let's start with the Chiefs. LeSean McCoy, a healthy scratch here, still, I guess, in the doghouse after his fumbles a couple of games ago. Damien Williams leads the way, 19 carries for 77 yards on the ground, plus 5 catches for 32 through the air. He does fumble, but, I mean, Darrell Williams saw just 3 touches. So do we have the clear cut back in Kansas City with Damien Williams now, or what?
I am not jumping to conclusions here. So LeSean McCoy, they said after the game that this was a planned absence and that it was a planned rest day for him. It sounds like a load of crap, but at the same time, Damien Williams fumbled, and that's why LeSean McCoy lost this job, right? Like, he was running with that starting job, and it was somewhat of a timeshare, but still, he was the starter, and he lost it when he fumbled. But knowing that Damien Williams fumbled the ball and lost that fumble at a pivotal point in the game, that the Titans, like, granted, the Chiefs' defense was horrendous. Like, they're a big part of the reason they lost. The Chiefs should not lose when they score 32 points. But the Titans were missing a lot of players on defense. So I'm not going to, if you have LeSean McCoy, don't drop him just yet. I'd say hang on to him. Let's see one more week of how this plays out. Damian Williams, obviously you're not dropping him, but I'm not going to treat this as like a locked in workhorse scenario moving forward, because I don't think it is.
Yeah, I don't think you can ever get to that point where you're going to feel that way with the Chiefs. We've just seen it too many times. I mean, every week we would talk about who do we have higher this week, Tags, McCoy, or Williams. So, yeah, I do not in any way buy the planned rest day. I don't really think that's how football works necessarily, but I get the excuse. But either way, yeah, Williams fumbled, and that's just, man, just don't blow the chance when you have it. And he wasn't terrible, and he got carries after that, but certainly that's not what you want to see. The passing game, meanwhile, is lit, as the kids say. Patrick Mahomes throws for 446 yards and 3 touchdowns, 1 to Tyreek Hill, who sees 19 targets, catches 11 passes for 157 yards, 1 to Travis Kelce, who catches all 7 of his targets for 75 yards and has another touchdown negated by a penalty, and 1 to Mecole Hardman, who catches his lone target and just basically outruns the entire Titans defense for 63 yards. I'll be honest, Tags, we could talk a little bit about Sammy Watkins, but I got to keep it moving, so we're going to move on here to the Titans. Corey Davis inactive here, just a tidy little 188 yards rushing for Derrick Henry on 23 carries. He's just a beast. Don't worry about the fact that he doesn't catch a whole lot of passes if you're in a PPR or half PPR leagues. Ryan Tannehill throws for 2 touchdowns, 1 to Anthony Firkser, 1 to Adam Humphries at the end of the game to win it. A.J. Brown, just 1 catch for 17 yards on 4 targets. Really disappointing. Anything to discuss here on the Titans?
So should we just say that the Titans' number one receiver just doesn't produce? Can we say that? Is that basically what we should?
Yeah, I'm totally there.
I mean, we've watched this with Corey Davis like the last couple of years, where it's like the number one receiver. Mike Vrabel before the season said there's not a competition here, that Corey Davis is by far our number one receiver, and the production doesn't show that, right? And now that we see AJ Brown, I actually played AJ Brown in a cash lineup today, and I'm kind of regretting it. So I mean, to see like towards the end of the game he was getting targets, it's frustrating for sure. And to know that the Titans won, if you were to tell me that the Titans were going to score 35 points, I'd be like, okay, Derrick Henry's gonna have some value, but who else? Like, I want to find out who else is gonna have value. Jonnu Smith wasn't that guy, Adam Humphries wasn't that guy, AJ Brown wasn't that guy. And it's like, okay, I'm just gonna admit defeat on this game and say whatever, don't trust Titans moving forward.
Yes, that is the correct take, Tags. I mean, we've talked about Corey Davis quite a lot. I have just never been on. I get that Tannehill is an upgrade for the passing game. I completely agree with that. But there's just no way I'm trusting any Titans wide receiver going forward. I haven't all year. And I agree. I ranked Brown, decently this week, but probably won't again, at least for the foreseeable future. Let's move on to Bucks 30, Cardinals 27. I'm really annoyed that OJ Howard put a crimp in my what's your problem segment. He sees 7 targets, catches 4 of them for 47 yards and a score. That was Jameis Winston's only touchdown on the day, so disappointment here. Mike Evans 4 for 82, Chris Godwin 6 for 74. Again, both disappointing. I mean, I know the yardage is fine, but of course this is a great matchup, and Patrick Peterson actually leaves this game, I believe, with a hamstring injury, or maybe that developed later in the game. But either way, I don't really want to talk about the passing game. Bad game. Let's talk about the running game here. Peyton Barber and Ronald Jones each see 11 carries. Both of them score touchdowns. Barber 11 for 43 on the ground. Jones 11 for 29 on the ground. But Tags, Jones sees 8 targets, catches all of them for 77 yards. He did lose a fumble in the game, but I mean, that involvement in the passing game, how are you feeling about Jones here? They have the Saints coming up, not a good matchup, but how are you feeling about him going forward?
Well, it worries me that he fumbled, because after the fumble, that's when we saw Peyton Barber get the goal line carries, and that was like, oh no, did this happen? Did we lose it? It worries me a little bit, to be honest with you. And I was someone that I wanted to move Jones. I was like, oh, if he gets 15 touches in this game, I'm moving him into my top 24 running backs the rest of the season. This offense is high scoring. I know the offensive line isn't great, but again, being attached to that high scoring offense means a ton to running backs. But knowing Barber equaled him in carries, that is absolutely concerning. I'm not going to sit here and say that Ronald Jones deserves 8 targets per game in the passing game. I don't think he's an elite receiver or anything like that. He's not a James White. He's not a Christian McCaffrey. So yeah, I'm a little concerned coming off this game. I know that fantasy wise, he had a fantastic game. He hit in DFS. He turned out to be a much better play than David Montgomery, but there are definitely warning signs.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he did see roughly 50% of the snaps, Barber about 27%, Ogunbowale 27%. But yeah, that fumble might have changed things, which is really disappointing because he got off to the great start right off the bat. So yeah, it is something to monitor. Jones is still the back to own, of course. But, you know, this was looked like it was about to be the breakout game. And you might see, you know, another owner, one thing I'll say, another owner may see the just stats, the raw stats in there that he scored a touchdown, that he put up, you know, over 100 yards total. It might be somebody who you can sell if sort of, you know, they're not digging deep enough, because it's not somebody who I feel comfortable with going forward. Particularly, again, they get the Saints coming up. That's a really tough matchup for running backs. Now, for the Cardinals, look, we talked about Christian Kirk, so that's good. So again, let's stick with the running game here. Look, it's a tough matchup against the Bucs, okay? But Kenyon Drake, 16 touches, just 41 yards, not good. But it's a lot better than David Johnson, 6 touches for 8 yards and a lost fumble. Drake saw 63% of the snaps. Johnson saw 45% of the snaps. Tags, what is happening in this backfield?
It's gross. I thought it would be somewhat of a timeshare, and, you know, I had people tell me that I was an idiot for thinking that David Johnson's the clear superior back, but he's aging. He's up there in his career. I don't think people realize how old David Johnson is, but he's getting up there. He's playing through injuries right now. A back injury, that's the thing. I've dealt with back injuries throughout my life, and to the point where I had a major back surgery, and it's not something that gets better overnight. There's going to be good days. There's going to be bad days, but Kenyon Drake's a very capable running back. But David Johnson seeing 6 touches in a game, I mean, he practiced all week. He deemed himself 100%, which is crap. We knew that.
All right, let's put a number on it here, Tags.
I don't even know where we put him in the rest of the season rankings. Like,
that's what I'm going to ask you. Look, okay, I'm not going to hold you to it, because next week I'm going to call you out of whatever you've done anyway, but let's talk about it right now. You had him 16th coming in. I had him 18th coming in. Right now, I'm forcing you to say, okay, Tags, given what you saw here, maybe it's going to come out he's much hurt. What if somebody's offering you a trade for David Johnson, or you're looking, what's the caliber of player that you'd be willing to do? I mean, he's 16th. Where is he going as of right now? You can move it, but right now, where is he going?
19th running back.
I'm going lower, Tags. I'm going lower.
Name some players you'd take over him.
I got to be honest right now, because I don't think he's necessarily held. I'll take Philip Lindsay over him. I'll take David Montgomery over him.
Yeah, David Montgomery, I would, yes. That's the territory that I'm at, though. Like, that's basically, I think you're right in the conversation. Like, I don't know if I don't think I would take Lindsay over him just yet, but it's close.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's where he's going right now. It's just not somebody who I'm willing to trust at this point, because he's just, you know, whatever this is, you know, healthy running backs, or running backs who are going to be able to contribute week in and week out, don't put up games like this. I don't care about the matchup. And again, you know, it's just, you know, he wasn't getting the touches anyway, so I highly doubt he's fully healthy. So regardless, let's move on to the best game that anybody's ever seen. Bears 20, Lions 13. Let's start with the unstoppable force that is the Bears offense. A little bit of a slow start for Trubisky here. He does wind up with 3 touchdown passes despite just 173 yards. 1 to Tariq Cohen, 1 to Taylor Gabriel, 1 to Ben Broniker. Allen Robinson does not find the end zone here, but 9 targets, 6 catches, 86 yards. Hard to ask for too much more, but let's talk about the running game. You mentioned David Montgomery. It's a soft matchup. He gets 17 carries, just 60 yards on the ground. I mean, Tex, he's got one game with more than 67 yards rushing all season. Is he really an RB2 going forward?
He is, just due to the workload that he's getting. I mean, getting, you know, 17 plus touches per game, like basically every single week over the last 2 months, that's basically where we're almost at with it. There was like one hiccup in there, but that's basically where we're at. I don't really care like what offense you're in. You're going to be in RB2 territory most of the time. And in a matchup like this, we expected a lot more. But it seemed like the Lions were willing to sell out and say, we're going to make Trubisky beat us. And to be fair, on Mitch's part, like, I've been hard on him this year, and like, he has been bad. But this was a game where he looked like the 2018 version. And I'm not saying that that's like it's not a guy that's going to win fantasy championships, but he looked like a competent quarterback, a guy that could put it in the vicinity of his wide receiver, give them a chance on the ball, a lot of one-on-one situations. There were actually a couple drops in this game. Taylor Gabriel had 2 drops. Tariq Cohen, I can't remember if Cohen had one or not, but Trubisky played a competent game, and he did exactly what the Bears were hoping he would do all season. It's a shame that it didn't come until week 10. But yeah, I mean, overall, just competent game from the passing game. Allen Robinson walks away with 6 catches for 86 yards in a tough matchup against Darius Slay. So David Montgomery owners are going to walk away mad from this game, but I think if you're not a David Montgomery owner, this is an opportunity for you to buy him, because again, he is getting those touches, and if Trubisky starts playing a little bit more competently, they're going to have more scoring opportunities with this offense. So that's only good things for David Montgomery, because he's the clear-cut goal line back. Mike Davis is no longer on the roster. Tariq Cohen as well. He's just not very good at carrying the ball.
No, but he did catch, the pass, I believe, from the 10-yard line. That was a nice play as well. And I agree, you know, they got off to a slow start, but it looked like, I don't know, something clicked with Trubisky. I don't necessarily think it's going to be that way going forward, of course.
I said I want to see at least two games in a row before I start making any conclusions.
Yeah, but it was like somebody getting really hot, you know, just somebody who's like all of a sudden things looked like they slowed down a little bit because he did make a couple of really nice throws there. On the other side of the ball, I mean, you have no Matthew Stafford here at Tex. He's got fractures in his back, I guess. I don't know whether or not that means he's out for the season. I mean, he wasn't even declared out for this game until right before, so I don't know necessarily if he's going to come back. Ty Johnson leaves the game also with a concussion, so really not a lot of good stuff offensively. Jeff Driscoll does what he can. He throws a relatively late touchdown pass to Kenny Galladay. Let's assume for now that Matthew Stafford's going to be out for the rest of the season. Okay, I don't think that that's the case, but let's just assume that he is. What is the effect on the wide receivers? You had Galladay 14th. You hate Marvin Jones anyway. He was 37th. how far would they fall if you're getting rid of Matthew Stafford here?
You know what's funny about this is that I'm now known as like the Marvin Jones hater, but I was actually higher on Marvin Jones than I think like 90% of analysts coming into the year. I said that the gap between Galladay and Marvin Jones shouldn't have been as big as it was. But I'll take on that note. But looking at their upcoming matchup against Dallas, that's a tough matchup. Washington, anybody can get it done against them. Chicago, tough matchup. Minnesota, not as tough as people think. Tampa, and then Denver in week 16. That Denver in week 16 is bad. That's like a killer for Kenny Galladay because he's going to get Chris Harris Jr. I mean, I would probably, if Stafford was out for the year, but I know you mentioned it's probably not likely, but if he was out, I'd probably move Galladay down to wide receiver 24 territory, 23, 24, and then Marvin Jones would be wide receiver 4 territory.
That's fine. I mean, he already is for you, Tags. Don't even, don't try to sugarcoat it.
No, he's borderline. He's right there at 39.
No, that's fine. And again, I have no idea. I mean, you just fractures in the back, which he may have played through last year as well. I don't really know what's going on necessarily there. Driscoll wasn't that terrible. He was able to sort of put up at least a few competent numbers. But again, Galladay did very little until the very end of that game where he caught that touchdown. So it is a little worrisome. Meanwhile, I don't know. Let's assume Ty Johnson is out with a concussion. Do you want any part of the backfield? Do you think J.D. McKissic takes it? Or is it just somebody you're like, it's going to be Paul Perkins and J.D. McKissic, and I don't really want a part of it?
They might sign Mike Davis off the street.
Yeah.
If the Bears cut him, that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, there's been a lot of things they could do that would make sense, and they haven't done.
I don't think that McKissic's going to carry that load. No, I think they're going to sign someone, and they grab Bo Scarborough. That's not the answer either. So Mike Davis is probably the answer.
All right, let's move on here to the late games. Dolphins 16, Colts 12. Just an ugly game all around. Really nothing from the Dolphins offense here. Fitzpatrick throws for just 169 yards. With a pick, he does run for the lone touchdown for the Dolphins here. He left at some point late. I don't know if he was being evaluated for a concussion, but it didn't look like he was standing on the sidelines at the very end, so it looked okay. Devontae Parker does see 10 targets, catches 5 of them for 69 yards. And Kalen Ballage sees 20 carries, but rushes for just 43 yards. I mean, is there anything you want to say about the Dolphins offense, Tex?
I mean, is there an area to throw up?
I mean, I'm not with you right now, so there might be. But in the end, look, Kalen Ballage, he's 24 touches, you know, and it's not like it was a good matchup or anything like that. It's a difficult matchup against the Colts, who are pretty good against running backs. So is it somebody who you're like, look, I realize that he's not particularly good. They have Buffalo next, then Cleveland, then Philadelphia. I assume Kalen Ballage is not somebody who you need to worry about despite the volume.
You have bye weeks coming up and that might be a killer, but I mean, Kalen Ballage ain't it. The good thing is that they gave him 20 of the 22 carries in the team, but I mean, 2.2 yards per carry. It wasn't a good matchup against the Colts, but this guy just continues to be like the most inefficient runner of like maybe all time. Like, we're approaching like worse than LeGarrette Blount at his age, like 29 season.
Yeah, but on the bright side, Tags, I don't think that he actually ducked out of the way of any targets
well,
in this game.
Good.
So let's look at some positives for him. Yeah, look, when we're spending our time talking about Kalen Ballage, I think we can safely say there are no real fantasy takeaways from the team. On the other side of the ball, look, Jacoby Brissett was questionable coming in. I never thought he was going to play. I thought it would have been crazy, but I'm sure they thought that they were going to be able to win the game, which they don't. Brian Hoyer, absolutely dreadful. 204 yards. He does throw the one touchdown pass to Jack Doyle, but 3 interceptions. Eric Ebron sees 12 targets, catches 5 of them, leads the team with just 56 yards receiving. It was just a terrible game. Meanwhile, Marlon Mack kind of disappointing. 19 carries for 74 yards. I mean, look, I don't know if Brissett is necessarily going to be back, because there was a report earlier today that it's certainly far, despite the fact that he was quote unquote close for this game, it certainly sounded like it's not a sure thing that he's going to be back next week against Jacksonville. I mean, I don't know. What are your takeaways here from this pretty dreadful game?
It was dreadful, and it was a game I unfortunately watched too much of. But I this basically this entire week said it screams the Patriots are going to be the champions again. Think about it. Like, the Colts, they lose to the Dolphins. The Dolphins have now won two games in a row. Like, what the hell are you doing, Dolphins? Like, guys, you guys are supposed to be tanking. Did you guys forget? Apparently, someone didn't get the memo that they were supposed to lose every game the rest of the season, because they're losing grips on that number one pick. But then going on, the Colts, obviously a team that is expected to be a contender. Nope. The Saints lose to the Falcons. The Chiefs lose to the Titans. It's like, what is going on in the NFL? I mean, it's part of the reason we love the game as much as we do. But yeah, I mean, Marlon Mack is the biggest disappointment here. He was someone that I really, and I would still suggest trying to sell him in fantasy football, because he's not a guy that's involved too heavily in the passing game. He's been, honestly, like, bad this year. He has not been someone that you want to rely on a weekly, week in, week out basis. And if you look at his schedule, he plays Tampa Bay and New Orleans in weeks 14 and 15. Those are two of the worst matchups for running backs in the schedule right now. And those are the first 2 weeks of the fantasy playoffs. So, yeah, Marlon Mack is someone I was looking to say, oh, he's going to be a sell high, but I'm willing to sell it even middle prices with Marlon Mack.
Yeah, I like it. This one really kills me, because it's a game where they really needed him to, you know, kind of carry the load, and he couldn't. And it's really disappointing in that one. So certainly, you know, Jacksonville, Houston, Tennessee, the Bucks, it's just, and the Saints, it's just not a great schedule for a guy who really couldn't get it done in a matchup where not only was it a soft matchup, but it was a matchup where, you know, you knew that they needed him to come through with that big game. So really disappointing there. Let's move on to the Packers 24, Panthers 16, a game that was played largely in the snow, so you can do with that what you wish. Rodgers throws for just 233 yards, no touchdowns, but again, it's because Aaron Jones, 13 carries for 93 yards and 3 touchdowns. A little odd here. Again, I heard you mention, you know, Jamal Williams, because I teased you about him, I know, last week. You know, he also sees the 13 carries. So they had the same amount of carries, 63 yards. But again, Jones gets all 3 of the touchdowns. Meanwhile, look, I tried to watch the game. We were recording as this was ending. But to me, when I saw it, everything I saw about Devontae Adams made him look like he was nearly 100%. You know, I didn't feel that way last week, but he basically looked like his own self. There was no James Bradbury in this game. So, you know, not the toughest matchup necessarily there. But again, 10 targets, 7 catches, 118 yards. What are your takeaways here on the Packers side of the ball?
That Alan Lazard continues to impress, and he's someone that should be rostered. Like, Marquez Valdes-Scantling is someone that I suggested you drop last week, but Lazard is a real thing. Like, he's a guy that's getting trust from Aaron Rodgers. When Rodgers gets in trouble, he goes to, like, obviously Devontae Adams is still that guy, but Lazard is the biggest takeaway I had from that game, was that Alan Lazard is trusted by Aaron Rodgers. He continues to play more snaps. I don't really even care if Marquez Valdes-Scantling has, like, a few more snaps than he does, because they're getting him on the field in different ways. That's my biggest takeaway here. Aaron Jones, not shocking. Honestly, it's really not, because people ask me every single week, should I trade Aaron Jones for this? I'm like, I can't say yes, because, like, I mean, I know it's, like, it seems unsustainable, but he's playing alongside Aaron Rodgers, and that has tons of benefits. So I'm hesitant to give away Aaron Jones. I have him ranked as my number 6 running back for the rest of the season.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's no getting rid of Aaron Jones. You shouldn't at this point. I mean, I get that Jamal Williams is cutting into, you know, his touches, and that's fair. And, you know, I teased you, Tags, about having Jamal Williams a little too low in your rankings. Again, he got more touches in this game than he usually does. He's usually around the 7 to 10 range. This one, he got, you know, the 13 carries, he got a target. But there's no reason to be worried about Jones whatsoever. I mean, he's a top, maybe top 5 back, top, you know, 6 or 7 at the absolute worst. He's a true stud. Lazard, by the way, 6 targets, 3 catches, 27 yards. So obviously not the biggest game, but there was at least one play that I saw where Rodgers was in trouble. And, you know, you could see that he trusted Lazard to go where he needed to go at that very play. And, you know, the announcers were commenting on it. So, you know, I'm not overly excited about Lazard, but I would say, to the extent there is another receiver to own in Green Bay, it is Lazard. Definitely over MVS, definitely over Allison or anything like that. On the other side of the ball, Kyle Allen, you know, he throws for 307 yards. He does throw the one touchdown pass to Curtis Samuel, but he throws a pick, not, you know, the most impressive game. Meanwhile, Christian McCaffrey, 20 carries for 108 yards and a touchdown. He also catches six passes for 33 yards. DJ Moore continues just to be uber reliable here. 11 targets, catches nine of them for 120 yards. And Greg Olsen bounces back here with the game. You know, he doesn't have too many of these games, but when he does, they're pretty impressive. Sees 10 targets, catches eight of them for 98 yards. Thoughts here on the Panthers?
DJ Moore is going to be a superstar, and some people might say that he already is, but I think there's room for growth with him, like in terms of like if he gets better quarterback play, because Kyle Allen, he's been competent, I'll give him that, but I don't think that Kyle Allen's the long-term solution for this team. I think they're going to end up, I don't know if Will Greer is either. I mean, there's so many things left to be determined with this team. You know, is Kyle Allen the guy? Is Cam Newton going to get released? You know, is he going to get traded? I don't know what they're doing with him. They drafted Will Greer in the third round, so there's a lot of question marks with this team, but DJ Moore is a superstar. He's had at least eight targets now in five straight games, so he's like a lock and load wide receiver two every single week. Curtis Samuel is still getting plenty of opportunity. I know he scored a touchdown here, but he might actually be considered a buy low in fantasy football. Like, because I don't know if his production matches all the opportunity that he's getting just quite yet. And that Christian McCaffrey is just, well, he's a superstar.
I really wish DJ Moore could find the end zone, man. He is so incredibly good. He really is. So, you know, that's the only bugaboo really with him. But, you know, kind of like Leonard Fournette, you'll take all the production that comes, even if it's not with the touchdown. Let's finish up here with the Steelers 17, Rams 12, a game that finished not long ago.
I'm just laughing at Jared Goff.
Yeah, no. Steelers 17, Rams 12. I mean, mostly a defensive effort here from the Steelers. Mason Rudolph throws for 242 yards, and he does throw the touchdown to James Washington, who catches six passes for 90 yards. But Juju Smith-Schuster, only three catches on six targets for 44 yards. The running game does very little. Jalen Samuels leads with 14 carries for just 29 yards, and he certainly does not see quite the amount of targets that he saw last week. Eight targets, just three catches for 11 yards. I mean, it was an ugly game, Tags, but any takeaways here from the Steelers?
Don't trust them.
That's the correct take, just to be clear. Yeah, I mean, sometimes, by the way, just to be clear, sometimes I just wait because I know Tags could probably talk for like 10 minutes if I let him go forever. That is the absolute correct take. I mean, out of curiosity, where do you have Smith-Schuster ranked for rest of season?
He's someone I continue to move down, and I'm like, I want to move him further, but I feel like I'm going to get that message, you know, like when you submit rankings and it tells you.
Are you sure? Is that really where you want to do?
I mean, I've moved him down. I have him at wide receiver 29, and I feel like I'm not low enough.
Oh, dude. I mean, you're talking about not being low enough. I think I still had him 18th coming into this week. You had him 24th. I completely agree. I can't even articulate why necessarily. And again, somebody called out, I think, both me and Bobby because of where we ranked him this week. And we gave our you know, reasoning. But in the end, yeah, dude, there's just not anybody who can really feel good. When Connor's in there, I think you can feel fine about Connor. But overall, yeah, I completely agree. It's not a team that you want to trust. Not a great matchup. I mean, the Rams have a tough defense. They were coming off the bye here. But still, yeah, it's definitely not. Meanwhile, the Rams offense, Jared Goff, 243 yards, two interceptions. He also loses a fumble. Gurley sees 12 carries for 73 yards. You know, Malcolm Brown gets in there just for five carries for 10 yards. On the receiving side, I mean, Robert Woods has a decent game here. There's no Brandon Cooks, 11 targets, seven catches, 95 yards. Gerald Everett continues to kind of work his way up towards that maybe circle of trust. 12 targets, eight catches for 68 yards. But Cooper Kupp, four targets, zero catches in this game. I mean, has Minka Fitzpatrick just completely transformed this defense? Or, I mean, is this just, look, the Rams have huge problems offensively and we can't really trust them anymore?
People might look back at that Minka Fitzpatrick trade and, like, I remember when it happened and people are like, the Steelers are idiots. You know, they're going to finish as a terrible team. And what are they doing? And I mean, at the time, I'm like, yeah, I mean, I understand the thought process, but Minka Fitzpatrick's a proven talent in the NFL. We have busts, first-round busts all the time. So, I mean, if the Steelers had conviction that they were going to have a chance this season, I had no issue with it. Minka Fitzpatrick has been a godsend to that defense. Like, I want to say that he has five interceptions now since he joined the team. He has, like, two forced fumbles, a fumble recovery. Like, it's never-ending, and it seems like he's always in the play. Like, I mean, a superstar, man. A difference maker, a true difference maker. And I'm sorry to those that are listening, because there's going to be a lot of people that are going to razz me about this. But I posted it on Twitter this weekend, and I got some fascinating responses. A lot of people give me excuses for Jared Goff. But now going over his last 17 games, Jared Goff has thrown 18 touchdowns. Over the last 17 games for Mitch Trubisky, he has thrown 22 touchdowns. And if you go back, and some people are like, oh, well, Tags, you're being a Bears homer. And I said, whoa, 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 whoa. This is not a compliment for Mitch Trubisky. This is the exact opposite of that, as a matter of fact. It's more pointing out how bad Jared Goff has been. And so many people have talked about, well, Goff has a team that they score rushing touchdowns and they do this and they do that. And I'm like, are you guys really going to try and find every excuse for Jared Goff not to perform? Is that what we're doing? I mean, they had 2 weeks to prepare for this game. I know it was on the road. I know it's the Steelers. It's a tough matchup, but this is supposed to be Sean McVay's offense. Jared Goff, you know, the first year and a half playing for Sean McVay would not have had a game with no touchdowns. They wouldn't have pulled him off the field for Blake Bortles like they did today.
Yeah, in the end, look, once that offensive line, you know, took the significant downgrade that it did this year, he has just been a complete... I mean, again, and it dates back somewhat to last year, like you said, but really, he has just been a different quarterback. This entire offense cannot roll, and it's just... It's all bad, Tags. I mean, you know, you're starting Gurley every week, correct? I mean, I want to put things into perspective. You're still starting Todd Gurley every week, right?
Yes, he actually had a really good game considering.
Yeah, I mean, 12 carries for 73 yards, you're certainly not going to argue.
Against the Steelers, too.
Yeah, against the Steelers, too. And you're still going to start Robert Woods. I mean, he's obviously, you know, this is one of his better games, but you're starting Cooper Kupp despite this, and you're probably starting Robert Woods most weeks. Is that fair?
Yeah. Robert Woods has moved down into wide receiver three territory for me.
I agree.
But with Brandon Cooks out of the lineup, it definitely, you know, increases his stock. But, you know, we're going to see Cooper Kupp back at it next week. It's just funny to me that we Blake Bortles scored more points than Cooper Kupp today.
I mean, look, though, that's going to happen.
No, it should not happen.
Look, I'm trying to be positive. Well, anyway, look, no, it's fair. And again, it's been the Rams offense is nothing like what it was last year. But, you know, certainly it still has players you're going to throw out there week in and week out. All right, that's going to do it for today's show. Thanks again to our sponsor, FanDuel, where you can get $20 in FanDuel credits by going to FanDuel.com/FantasyPros or go to FantasyPros.com/offers for 6 months of unlimited access to our premium offerings when you deposit $10 to FanDuel. Also, thanks to Pristine Auction, who sponsors our Dak Prescott helmet giveaway. Remember, they have a ton of auctions every day where you can get all sorts of fantastic items for your man cave. Just go to PRISTINEauction.com. And don't forget to use the referral code FANTASYPROS for a $5 voucher. Enjoy the rest of your Week 10 football, everyone. Tags and Bobby will be back to talk you through the waiver wire.
I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.
With the new Dexcom G7, you can achieve better diabetes results without painful finger sticks. It sends your glucose numbers to your compatible phone or watch, so you can always see where you are and where you're heading. See how food and exercise affects your glucose, making it easier to spend more time in range and lower your A1C. Take control of your diabetes with the #1 recommended CGM brand. It's easy to get started today at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.